All right, we're going to get started, everyone. Boker Tov. Boker Tov, everyone. Nice to see so many that are with us this morning, learning together. Rav Kook. There are a couple. Yeah, there's. Does everybody have a? Everybody have a copy? All right. Hopefully, no. You. All right. Do you need a copy? Oh, you have a copy. Okay, great. All right, great. All right, wonderful. Let's just begin by announcing those that are sponsoring this morning. We begin with a regular sponsor of Le'iloi Nishmas Miriam Bas Avram, Alav Shalom V'Shem Tov Ben Shlomo Zichrono Livracha. And we have two other sponsors as well, the Shi'urim of this morning, in loving memory of Elaine Mittman, Esther Ita, Bad Baruch Halevi, Alav Shalom, on her third yard site, Chav Dalet Iyar, from Bobby and Heshi Brooks and Arlene Antebi. And the Shi'urim this morning are also sponsored by Ian Fried, bearer, for Refuah Shlema for Ruvain Ben Chana Golda. So we thank the sponsors. It should be at Eloy Neshama, for those that we are learning in their memory, and a Refuah Shlema as well. Okay. So we have the schus this morning to continue our learning of Rav Kook, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kook. And what I'd like to do this morning, and the piece that I chose this morning, is from the parak that we're learning in Eretz Chayfetz. But it's a piece that will relate to Yerushalayim and to Yom Yerushalayim. This coming Thursday night and Friday, we will, please God, celebrate the 56th anniversary of the reunification of Jerusalem. And the theme that I want to highlight this morning is a theme that will bring us, that will usher in this special celebration this coming week. So I thought it was appropriate and would be appropriate this morning to give our attention to Kedushat Yerushalayim, and that is something that Rav Kook speaks about in the following piece. So we begin now with the words of Rav Kook, as we do on a weekly basis. And this is, again, we're studying the work Eretz Chayfetz, the beautiful work of Rav Yeshaya Shapiro, Zichrono Livracha, Zatzal, where he compiles the teachings of Rav Kook. And this is from the fourth chapter, as you see at the very top of the page, Perek Dalet. And the topic is Eretz Yisrael V'Hagola. That's the topic of this Perek. And this is the third piece. This is Gimel in Eretz Chayfetz. And here we begin to read. At the top, you have the Hebrew and then the English translation below. And the source, if you look at the very end of the piece, is from Orot HaKodesh Chelek Shlishi. Okay. So here, Rav Kook is going to begin to speak about something very interesting, and that is the observance of mitzvot and the religious life of a Jew in Eretz Yisrael and in contrast in Chutz La'aretz. And he's going to speak about three items, and that is, and I'll just put out these three words, and we'll see it in a moment, is maisa, the actions of a Jew, dibor, the words of a Jew, and machshava, and the thoughts of a Jew. And it's a way of thinking about our kiyum of mitzvot and our relationship with God in terms of maisa, in terms of our actions, in terms of mitzvot, in terms of dibor, in terms of the words that we say, and machshava, in terms of our thoughts. So here we go. Let's jump into the words of Rav Kook. B'chutz la'aretz, outside the land of Israel, ein mitgale ki'im ha'erech shel ha'ma'aseh, that the value or the importance of ma'aseh, of action, is what is most prominent outside the land of Israel. U'be'eretz Yisrael ha'erech shel ha'dibor. But in Eretz Yisrael, you kind of move up a notch, and dibor becomes that much more important or that much more impactful. So let's talk about that just for a moment, and just quickly kind of to interpret the words of Rav Kook. Maisa, the importance of outside the land of Israel, of mitzvot, of kiyum ha-mitzvot, and I would put it in this context, or in this way, You have a pasuk in the Torah that says, "Ubechukotehem lo telechu," that you are not to walk in the ways of the Gentiles that are around you. And outside the land of Israel, as we are in the atmosphere, in a culture in which we're exposed to the Gentiles around us, so it is important and that we put special emphasis on our actions. In other words, that our actions should be different, that we should look different, that we should act different, and that is the emphasis outside the land of Israel. Ube Eretz Yisrael, but a Jew living in the land of Israel, ha'erech, the value or the importance, shel dibur. You have importance in terms of speech, in terms of language, which you don't find the same way outside the land of Israel. Now, what does he mean by that? One way of understanding that line is the following, and that is that we know that we have what's called the mitzora, somebody that gets sarat. And why does one get sarat according to the Gemara? Because of Lashon Hara, because the language that they use. The Ramban says that the halacha of tzarat is a halacha, is a law that only applies to the land of Israel. Interesting. In other words, were you to say that same Lashon Hara outside the land of Israel, it does not affect the person in terms of receiving the tzarat. So we see that dibur, that the language that we use, our speech in the land of Israel, has a greater effect. It has greater impact. So again, Rav Kook says, when it comes to Maisa, that's the life of the Jew outside the land of Israel in terms of their actions. They have to be very careful in terms of mitzvot, trying to live a certain lifestyle in comparison to the world around them. But when we come to the land of Israel, we raise ourselves a notch, and not only in terms of our actions, but even our language is impacted, and that we're more careful. And that the impact of our language, the words that we say, have a greater influence in the land of Israel. That is what Rav Kook writes. And here, says Rav Kook, very interestingly, and as we go even closer, here in Yerushalayim, to the place of the Beit HaMikdash, ubeBeit HaMikdash ha'erech, the value or the importance, shel ha'machshava. Thought becomes, even what one is thinking in the area of the Beit HaMikdash, that has great impact. Now, what does that mean? This is a very interesting aspect of the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash, that the thought can pasul a korban. What does that mean? It means there's a halacha called pigul, which means that if one who is offering the korban has an inappropriate thought, let's say in their minds they say, we're going to eat this at a time, the korban, at a time that it's not permitted, or we're going to eat it in a place that it's not permitted, that then passels the korban, meaning the machshava itself, just what is in one's mind, has an effect on the avoda. Now, that's not true in most cases. In other words, that's not when it comes to, if you're putting on tefillin in the morning or lighting candles for Shabbos, okay, ideally we should have the right kavana, but if you don't have the right thought in mind, it doesn't affect, it doesn't passel the act, the kiyum of the mitzvah. So says Rav Kook, when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, even machshava, even our thoughts, have impact, and we kind of raise the level of our thinking. So here we have, says Rav Kook, we have outside the land of Israel, Maisa, in terms of action. When we come to the land of Israel, we have Dibur, that we put greater emphasis, and the effect of the land of Israel on our language. And in terms of machshava, in terms of as we are closer to the Beit HaMikdash and inside the Beit HaMikdash, and we're going to see that we're actually affected by that holiness, the Beit HaMikdash, that our thoughts are elevated, says Rav Kook, here in the land of Israel. Okay. Says Rav Kook, we read on, Mipnei kedusha Beit HaMikdash ha-mitnotzetzet be'eretz Yisrael, because of the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash that creates sparks, mitnotzetzet be'eretz Yisrael, that there's an influence of that holiness of the Beit HaMikdash. Kedivrei ha-tosafot beperek kodshei kadashim. He says, according to the words of the Tosfot, and again, the Tosfot meaning on the Daf Gemara in Perek Kodshei Kadashim, she'ikar kedushat Eretz Yisrael hi mipnei kedushat Beit HaMikdash. That the holiness, the essential holiness of Eretz Yisrael is due to the impact of the Kedusha, the Beit HaMikdash. We're going to focus on that in just a few moments. Midgale Kedushat HaMachshava B'chol Eretz Yisrael. So it affects the thought of a Jew throughout all of Israel. that the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash, and we know that in the Beit HaMikdash itself, that machshava, that we have to be very careful, and we are to raise our level of machshava inside the Beit HaMikdash, but that has an influence, that has an impact on all of Eretz Yisrael, that level of thought that we have. V'gam bizman hazeh, reading on, v'gam bizman hazeh, even in our day, yesh kitzat roshem imenu, there is still an impact of the Beit HaMikdash, a bit of an impact from the Beit HaMikdash, ki kedushatan af keshehen shamamin, because the kedusha of the Beit HaMikdash continues even though the Beit HaMikdash is no longer present. It's been destroyed. And we're going to, again, we're going to come back to that statement in a moment. Let's read on now to see the full piece. B'chutz la'aretz bitgalot hit notzitzut kitanot shel ha'arachim ha'ela. Outside the land of Israel, and here Rav Kook often comes back to this idea. In other words, it's not all lost if one is outside the land of Israel. There's a great advantage being in the land of Israel, but there's a possibility to always connect with this power of Eretz Yisrael, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, but it depends on a person's attachment to Eretz Yisrael, even if one is outside the land of Israel. Hane'elamim, they're hidden outside of Israel. Keman dechazi batar kosla, like one who looks at it through a fence. In other words, in a poetic, using this poetic term, that one is looking at it from afar. One can kind of pick up on it outside the land of Israel. But if one is focused on it, if one is focused on the holiness of the land of Israel, of Beit HaMikdash, then one can pick up these powerful vibes that come from Israel. Mipnei hatzipiyah gedolah l'tshuvat Hashem, because of the yearning, this great yearning for the salvation of God, l'vinyan ha'aretz, for the rebuilding of Eretz Yisrael, l'shivat Yisrael Eretz Yisrael, and the desire to return to the land of Israel, l'binyan Beit HaMikdash, hakshura biliban shel Yisrael, which is attached to the hearts of every Jew. And let's read the last paragraph. Chol mi shemitzapeh yoter lishua, and anyone who desires, who has a great yearning for the salvation, for the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, archei hadibor v'machshava mitgalim lo biyoter, then these values and the importance of language and thought becomes more revealed, umeatrim et archei hamaaseh shelo, and it crowns the actions. In other words, the actions, the mitzvah that a Jew does, one who is connected to the land of Israel, it raises those actions, the more that one anticipates and yearns for the geula. So every mitzvah now becomes a more impactful mitzvah, a deeper mitzvah. Al-Kain, and therefore, nismichu hashelot, and therefore the Gemara puts these two items next to one another, the famous questions that are asked to a person on Yom Adin, after 120 years on this earth. The Gemara says, the Gemara in Shabbos, Pilpalta bechachma, did you study Torah? Did you analyze? Vitzipita lishua, and did you anticipate the salvation? Zu lazu, that these are next to one another, meaning the person that anticipates and desires and yearns for the redemption, for the return of the Jewish people, the building of the Beit HaMikdash, that even the chachma of that person, the Torah learning, and the involvement in Jewish life is raised, that it's a richer and a deeper experience. Okay, these are the words of Rav Kook. As you see, Rav Kook is not always easy, and in terms of, you know, breaking down and understanding exactly what he means by all of this. And we could spend time, a lot of time, interpreting all of these words. But I want to focus on one section of this in particular. And again, anticipating Yom Yerushalayim. And he says the following in this piece that we just read, right at the end of the first paragraph. He speaks about the holiness of Eretz Yisrael. And he says that the holiness of Eretz Yisrael is based on the idea that the Beit HaMikdash, that the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash stood here in Yerushalayim. And that there is a holiness that spreads from that spot throughout the land of Israel, and even Shomema, even when the Beit HaMikdash is no longer standing in Yerushalayim, about a mile from here, the Beit HaMikdash is not there, but the holiness remains. The sanctity remains. That's what Rav Kook says. And we'll see that idea in a moment. Let me just begin analyzing this with the following teaching. And this comes from Rav Meir Twersky, who is a Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University. And he is a grandson of Rabbi Soloveitchik. And he quotes this idea from Rabbi Soloveitchik. And I think it's very, very interesting and something for all of us, especially those that live in Israel and live in Yerushalayim, to think about. He says, often we speak about the Holy Land, right? That's the term that we use. To go to the Holy Land, we live in the Holy Land. But Rabbi Soloveitchik said that that's not really accurate to say Holy Land, because Holy Land means singular, that there is one holiness in the land of Israel. Now, often when we think about the holiness of the land of Israel, we think about the holiness that's embedded in the land of Israel. In other words, we just read Bahar, we just read about Shemitah, and the Psukim in the Torah talk about that the land itself needs to rest, that there's a personality. We often speak about Rav Kook in terms of the love for the land of Israel, the rocks, right, at the end of Gemara Ksubos, where it speaks about the picking up the rocks of Israel and kissing the rocks of Israel, that there's an intrinsic holiness in the land of Israel. So that is one part of the holiness that exists in the land of Israel. That's Holy Land, but there isn't just that holiness in the land of Israel. There's another holiness in the land of Israel as well, and that is the holiness that emanates from the Makom HaMikdash. There's holiness in the land. Again, Rabbi Soloveitchik says, calling Israel the Holy Land is a misnomer, that it's not really accurate. If you want to be precise, it's a land that has two levels of holiness. There's holiness in the land itself, in the Eretz HaKodesh. We speak about Shemitah, Maaser, Truma, all of that that relates to the soil of the land of Israel. But there's another holiness, and I'm sure we're all feeling it right now, a holiness that's coming from the Makom HaMikdash, that's coming from the place of the Beit HaMikdash. And that holiness spreads out, it emanates from the Makom HaMikdash, and it goes, where does it stop? In other words, it continues, it's stronger here, we're just a mile from the Beit HaMikdash, but where does it end? Okay, whatever those gvulot, but your answer is you have the right answer. It ends with the gvulot of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, it doesn't go past the borders of Israel. Just like the land itself, the holiness that's embedded in the land, it's in the land itself and it only goes to the borders. That's true of this Kedusha that emanates from the land of Israel. I'm sorry, from the Makom HaMikdash. So that is something to think about. I'm not sure if we always think about it that way, or aware of that, the dual aspect of holiness that's found in the land of Israel. And again, even though the Beit HaMikdash is no longer there, as Rav Kook says, we'll see it in a moment, that Kedusha, the Kedusha of Beit HaMikdash remains. How do we know that, by the way, just practically? How do we know that Kedusha remains? And this is, I'm just as an example of this. The fact, what? Good, the Kotel, the fact that the Kotel, that's correct, and the Har HaBayit itself, there's a big sign outside the Har HaBayit from the Rabbinate of Israel, and what does it say? And don't go, right? It says you are not allowed to go on that spot. Now, okay, there's a controversy, but everyone agrees, by the way, that you're not allowed in the area of the Kodesh Kadashim, that you're not allowed in the area of the Azar. In other words, those areas are off limits. Why are they off limits? There's no Beit HaMikdash. What's the answer? The Kedusha, the Shechina remains. That's correct. Exactly right. Exactly right. So this is, it's not such a chiddush. In other words, we live with this. We're very much aware that Kedusha, the Beit HaMikdash, still remains in that spot. Yes? Please. Okay. Okay. All right. Great. So that is a way of thinking about the Kedusha. As Rav Kook says, and he quotes actually the Gemara, this Tosva, that says that's really the more powerful, to some degree, the most more powerful kind of Kedusha that is that one feels in the land of Israel. Say that one more time. Not only that area, but the area of the Azara, of the Kodesh. In other words, when they go up to the area of the Beit HaMikdash, they stand outside of any area that Levim or Kohanim were permitted to be, and Yisrael is not permitted in those areas today. But it's a whole debate and a whole discussion. So let's look at the following. I want to share with you three really astounding, they're very simple, but really astounding halachot that are found in the Rambam. And all of these three halachot, actually it's four, but two that are connected, will really give us appreciation for the Makom HaMikdash and what's so holy about Yerushalayim, what's so holy about each of us being here right now, living in Yerushalayim, studying Yerushalayim, visiting Yerushalayim. So the first halacha that I want to share with you quickly, just to move through these halachot, is the Mizbeach, the Makom HaMizbeach. This is from the Rambam Beis HaBechira. The Rambam has a whole section in his Mishnah Torah, and these are laws, of course, of the Mishnah Torah, where he speaks about the holiness of the place of the Beit HaMikdash. And here he speaks about the holiness of the Mizbeach. Now, by the way, the Mizbeach, that's not in the Kodesh Kadashim. That's in the outer part. That's in the Azara. Writes the Rambam, HaMizbeach Mekoma Mechuvam Biyoter. The place where the Mizbeach stood was a, and here you have the translation, was a precise location. Ve'ein Mishanin Oto Mimekomo Le'olam. You are not allowed ever to move that very spot to place a Mizbeach anywhere but that spot. Now, why is that? Shneimar Zeh Mizbeach Le'olam Yisrael. This is the Mizbeach as an offering to Yisrael or of Yisrael. Ubemigadash, and what happened in that spot? Ne'akad Yitzchak Avinu. So this is something that we're all familiar with, that the Rambam codifies, that the spot of the Mizbeach, not the Kodesh Kadashim, the spot of the Mizbeach was where the Mizbeach of Avraham and Yitzchak stood, that very precise spot. Ne'amar, v'lech lecha el eretz ha'moriyah, v'ne'amar v'divir ha'yamim, v'yachel Shlomo livnot et Beit Hashem Yerushalayim b'har, HaMoriah, that when he built that spot, when Shlomo built the Mizbeach on that spot, that was the spot of the Mizbeach, the altar of Akedas Yitzchak. Again, we go to the Kotel and we live here, but just to think for a moment here we are just a mile away from where Avraham and Yitzchak, where the Akedah took place, in terms of the Kedushas HaMakom, to appreciate that. Number two, and turning to page number two, this is the next halach in the Rambam. Uvemesored biyad hakol. This is very interesting. And he says it's a mesorah that everybody agrees to, which is an interesting language of the Rambam. Mesoret biyad hakol, which might mean that not only Jews, or it might refer to Gentiles as well, that everybody agrees to the holiness of the place of the Beit HaMikdash, of the Har HaBayit, Mesoret b'yad hakol, Shamakom shebana bo David u'shlomo ha-mizbeach, Begorin ar-ravna, Hu ha-makom shebana bo Avram ha-mizbeach, V'akar alav Yitzchak. That is the very place, which he said a moment ago, where the Akedah took place. V'hu, this you might find interesting or surprising. V'hu ha-makom shebana bo Noach k'she yatsa min ha-teva. Says the Rambam, this is the Mizbeach. We know that when Noach leaves the Teva, when he leaves the Ark, he builds a Mizbeach. It's on that very spot, a mile away here, on the Har HaBayit. That's where Noach, says the Rambam, built his Mizbeach. V'hu HaMizbeach Shehikriv Alav Kain V'Hevel. It's also the very spot of the story of Cain and Abel. It happens right here in Yerushalayim, right on that very spot of the Har HaBayit. U'bo Hikriv Adam HaRishon Karban. It's also Adam, when he brought a Korban, it was on that very spot. Keshenivra umisham, when he was first created, this is where he brought the Korban. Umisham nivra. And what does that mean? And from that very location, Adam is created. Meaning the dust, the dirt, the soil of that spot on the Har HaBayit is where Adam is. That when we talk about the Afar, when we talk about being created from Adama, that's the Adama. That's where Adam HaRishon was created. Amru Chachamim, Adam imakom kaparaso nivra, as our sages teach, that you're created, Adam Rishon, from a place of atonement, meaning that God will forgive, that there's a forgiveness that's intrinsic within the creation of man. Okay, so that's quite an astounding Rambam. Many talk about why the Rambam is doing this. The Rambam is a halacha sefer. Why is he sort of giving us some history here, or maybe a gadata? Okay, that's a question, but Obviously, he feels it's important for all of us to know. Now, the next Rambam, so those are the first two Rambams that I wanted to share with you. The next Rambam is a critical Rambam, and this is the point that we just made a moment ago, but to see it black and white in the Rambam in terms of the holiness that remains. So this is, as you see, Hilchot Beis HaBechira, Perek Vav, Halacha Tet Zayin, and I have it just bracketed where he talks about Shekedushat HaMikdash Yerushalayim, the Kedusha of the Beit HaMikdash Yerushalayim. Where is that Kedusha? Where does it emanate from? Why is there this Kedusha that we talk about in the unique Kedusha of Yerushalayim? Why is that? Mipnei HaShchina. Because God's presence resides here in Yerushalayim. Mipnei HaShchina VeHashchina Eina Batla. And that never stops. It never ends. Once Hashem chose this spot, and chose the spot of the Har HaBayit and the Mizbeach, that this is the place that he will reside, he resides there forever, for all time. That's what we mean when we talk about the Shechina and the Shechina in Yerushalayim and Kedushat Yerushalayim. That is what the Rambam writes, and the Rambam proves this, and he's from the following pasuk, Varehu Omer Vashimoti et Mikdashchem, Ve'amru chachamim, and I will destroy your temple or temples. Ve'amru chachamim, af al pi sheshomimin, even though the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, b'kedushatan hein omdin, but the Kedusha remains always. So that is the Rambam's, the position of the Rambam. By the way, there is some argument in this area. There are other opinions in this area, but this is the position of the Rambam. The Shechina remains in Yerushalayim. The Kedushat Yerushalayim that emanates from the Beit HaMikdash is one that emanates here in Yerushalayim and throughout Eretz Yisrael. Okay, one last halacha in the Rambam. And this is also a fascinating issue, and that is the place of the Aron HaBrit. So the Beit HaMikdash, we know, is destroyed. We no longer have the Aron. The Aron disappears. We're not sure the whereabouts of the Aron. And there's a discussion where that is. The holiness of the Aron. We talk about the Aron that has the Ten Commandments, has the Shivrei Luchot, it has the Sefer Torah that was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Rambam. And this is, again, the same section, Hilchot Beis HaBechira. This is Perek Dalet, Halacha Aleph. Even Haita B'Kodesh HaGadashim. And here he's speaking about now, not the Mizbeach, but inside that room, the Kodesh Kadashim, there was a stone. What is that stone called, by the way? The Evan Shetia, very good. Hashtia, which is the foundation stone. Okay, Evan Hashtia, or Evan Haita B'Kodesh Kadashim, B'Ma'aravo, on the west, She'aleha Haya Haron Munach. And that's where the Aron Kodesh sat. It sat on that Evan. Ulifanav, this is also fascinating, Tzinsenet Amanu Mate Aron. If you remember from the Torah, so they put aside what was in that room, going all the way back to the story of the Jewish people in the Midbar. They had a jar that had the man in it, and you also had the miraculous staff of Aaron that was sitting in front of the Aaron on that stone. That's what was inside the Kodesh Kadashim. Ube'et Shebana Shlomo et Habayit. And when Shlomo HaMelech built the Beit HaMikdash, the first Beit HaMikdash, the Yada Shesofa Licharev, and he knew that one day, I guess with the Ruach HaKodesh, it would be destroyed, or maybe he was just concerned that it might be destroyed one day. What did he do? Banabo Makom Leganozbo Haron Lamata. So he built a place below, Bimatmoniyot Amukot V'Akal Kalot. And he, how does it translate it here? In deep maze-like vaults, right, that are underneath, that today, and I think about this, when I stand at the Kotel, you may be looking right at it, actually. In other words, because the mountain is there, the Beit HaMikdash, so somewhere below the Beit HaMikdash, and it might be right on eye level, that somewhere you have these vaults, so you have rooms, secret rooms below where the Aron is today. When we talk about the Aron being there, so we have another reason to speak about the Kedushat HaMakom. We have the Shechina there, but we also have the Aseret HaDibrot. We also have the original Aseret HaDibrot, which are the Shivrei Luchot that were placed inside the Aron. So we have holiness that emanates from that spot with the Shekhinah, holiness that emanates from that place because the Aron HaKodesh, says the Rambam, is buried underneath. Again, there's some discussion in this area. Not everyone agrees with the Rambam, but this is the Rambam. This is the Rambam's position. And it was placed there, the Yoshiyahu HaMelech Siva V'Ganzu B'Makom Shebana Shlomo. And when Yoshiyahu HaMelech saw the impending exile of the Jewish people, that he commanded at that time that the Aron be placed underneath, and it is there, says the Rambam, until today. So thinking about Kedushat Yerushalayim and thinking about what it meant in 1967 to return to the Har HaBayit, to return to the Kotel, to come back to Yerushalayim, we now have, you know, closer access to and to be in the presence of the Beit HaMikdash and of the Shekhinah and of the Aron Kodesh. Beautiful. Okay, so now we can turn to page 3. And I want to share with you two very interesting insights in terms of the idea, when we think about Yerushalayim, that the holiness is present in Yerushalayim, that the holiness is present here in Yerushalayim and present throughout the land of Israel. And here we have the following statement which is made. This is a Gemara in Tainus at the very top of the page. And it says, Kol hamitavel al Yerushalayim zoche veroe besimchata. So whoever mourns for Yerushalayim will be zoche, is zoche, again here the translation is important, is zoche merits and sees its joy. So the question that's asked, and by the way, this is from a sefer Rav Yitzhak Mirsky Gionei Halacha, where he brings this teaching, and he brings a question that's brought by the Chasam Sofer and by the Torah Tamima on this statement that's made. Hamamar hazeh orer gedolei Yisrael hakasam sofer bal Torah Tamima l'dakdek b'nusach shalom heim he'iru tachat zoche v'roa b'simcha tabaloshan hoveh hayat sarech lomar yizke v'yire b'simcha ta. In other words, there's something a little bit, what seems a little bit strange in the language. The language should be one whose mitavel will see, will one day merit to see the joy of a rebuilt Jerusalem. So that is the question that's asked. And again, the statement is one whose mitavel sees and has joy. So the answer that's given, the answer by the Chasam Sofer and Torah Tamima, is that one who yearns for Jerusalem, one who yearns for the Kedush of Yerushalayim, one does not have to wait to merit that joy. Why not? Because the joy of Kedusha and the Shekhinah being here in Yerushalayim and the Har HaBayit exists today. It's not something that we have to wait for the Shekhinah to return. Right? That one day when the Beit HaMikdash, will there be a greater joy at that time? Absolutely. Right? That'll be an elevated joy, a greater joy. But the way that they read this line in the Gemara is that you're Zoche right now. We are Zoche right now if we appreciate that the Shekhinah, that the Aron Kodesh, that the holiness of Yerushalayim emanates from the Beit HaMikdash. So that's an interesting way of reading it. And one other interesting, you know, vort in terms of, and something that we say on a regular basis, in terms of the understanding of recognizing the fact that the Shekhinah and Kedusha is present in our day at this very moment. So Rav Yaakov Emdin has a parish on the Siddur, and he writes the following, or he asks the following question on the Rachemna Shebebirkas HaMazon. So in Birkas HaMazon we say, Rachemna Hashem Elokeinu al Yisrael Mecha, Val Yishlam Mirecha. So we ask the question, it sounds a little bit strange to talk about to have mercy on it. In other words, it's not a prayer for rebuilding, but just to have mercy on it. So look at the language. Kasha hayalo bakasha rachamim shem nevakshim rachamna shem lekenu al yushalim recha ve'al tzim shank vodecha ve'al malchus beis davi mishichecha ve'al abayis hagadol ve'akadosh v'arei ein derech levakesh rachamim al davar shechalaf ve'avar ve'einenu. You don't usually ask for rachamim for something that is, that language for something that's not present. In other words, you ask for something to return, something that's not there. But please have rachamim on the following. So rachamim, and that language seems to imply that it's something that exists. And that's exactly the point. Gam ein b'mashma loshon shezu tefila al binyano. It also doesn't sound like it's a prayer for its rebuilding, if you're saying have mercy on it. Ubir shebe'emet bakasha rachamim al hakayam. Rachim means for that which exists. Ki Yerushalayim u'beit hamikdash lo bitlu. Because the holiness of Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash has not been nullified. It's not annulled. Af im avra, and this is the language of Rav Yaakov Emden in a Siddur, af im avra tsuratan le'ayin hagashmi, even though we don't see it today, right, to the naked eye, right, if you look, there's no Beit HaMikdash there, mikol makom b'metziutan ha'atzmi, but essentially, right, the essential kedusha ha'amiti hein omdim berom olam. That holiness is there. The holiness of Shechina, of kedusha, remains at the Har HaBayit. Ve'omdos b'kedushatan af kashein shomemin le'inenu, even when it appears destroyed in our day, v'lachein muftachim anu shiyachzeru lanu b'acharit hayamim. So that is the rachem. Have mercy on it. Have mercy on the kedusha, on the Shechina that is present in Yerushalayim, and that we should have the full geula and the return of Hashem and holiness in its fullness. Okay, so I think this is a bit of a paradigm shift. Again, thinking in those terms, in terms of the kedusha that is present, that is everlasting, that is ever present here in Yerushalayim, and from the Makom HaMikdash. Okay, so that's part one. And part two, I want to turn to another aspect of Yerushalayim. And here we really speak about the intrinsic Kedusha, what we focused on, what we've emphasized in the first part of our shiur this morning, is the intrinsic Kedusha that's found in that place. No matter what, as the Rambam says, everything can be destroyed around it, but the Shechina, the presence of God, is there and here in Yerushalayim and spreads from that point throughout Yerushalayim. Throughout the rest of the land of Israel. But I want to bring the following Gemara, which you may have not seen, and an additional Gemara, which was really the first time that I discovered this Gemara in the Yerushalmi, that talks about one of the most famous terms that we use about Yerushalayim, and made famous in a song. I think if you'd ask anyone walking the streets of Israel, Yerushalayim shel Zahav, Yerushalayim shel Zahav. I think everybody here, when I say here, I mean in Israel, Yerushalayim shel Zahav. Now, what does that mean, Yerushalayim shel Zahav? Where is the source for Naomi Shemer's Yerushalayim shel Zahav, that terminology? So very good. So one of the sources, at least one, I don't know if, you know, there are other sources that she based this on, but one of them is the following Gemara. And the Gemara talks about the relationship, the very beautiful relationship between Rabbi Akiva and his wife Rachel. And the Gemara speaks about this Gemara Nedarim, and it speaks about the fact that they marry one another, and that was against the wishes of Kalba Savua, the father of Rachel, the wife of Rabbi Akiva. And not only was it against his wishes, but he said that if you marry my daughter, the fact that you married my daughter, I'm cutting you out of my, not only my will, but any monies, any support, any support. And he was a very, very wealthy person. And for Rachel to know that, and to know the difficult life that she would live, knowing that she would not have the monetary support of her family and of her father, that was something that was a great sacrifice. So, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. Not a lot has changed since then. Okay, so look at what the Gemara says. So here they are impoverished; they do not have money. Rabbi Akiva and his wife. In the winter, they would sleep in a storehouse of straw. I'm reading the translation. And Rabbi Akiva, this is such a beautiful line. And Rabbi Akiva would gather strands of straw from her hair. It sounds like in the morning, as Rachel would wake up, and they were lying on the floor in this barn, that Rabbi Akiva would pick out the straw from her hair and to beautify her and maybe to thank her for what she is the sacrifice that she is making for him. And he said to her, "Ihavaili, if I had the means," this is in the Gemara, but I'm reading the language of the Gemara, and in the translation, Raminu Lech Yerushalayim de Dahava. If I had the means, I would place on your head a Jerusalem of gold. Yushalayim shel Zahav. That's the language. Dahava is Zahav, is the Aramaic for Zahav. So this is the source, Yushalayim shel Zahav. And Rabbi Akiva said, I will, if only I could do it, if only I had the means. And later in life, he has the means, and he's able to do that. And we'll see in the next Gemara that she wears the Yushalayim shel Zahav. So a kind of crown, and with the walls of Yerushalayim, I'm not sure exactly what was on it, but with an outline of Yerushalayim, and that's what she wore. And that was the promise that Rabbi Akiva gave to his wife. Now look at the following Gemara. Now this Gemara appears, this is the Talmud Yerushalmi. We know we have the Bavli, the Yerushalmi. It's found in Maseches Sota Perek Tes, and it has the following little episode. So if you just, a few words in, it says, Atarot Kalot. If you see right below where it says, Daf Mem Vav. Atarot Kalot. So these were the crowns of brides. It seems that this became a minhag, that the brides would wear this gold Yushalayim crown. Zu'ir Shel Zahav. It is an ornament, which was an ornament of the gold, a golden ornament of the ear, and the ear is referring to the ear Yushalayim, of Yerushalayim of gold. Rabbi Akiva Asali Ishto Ir Shel Zahav, says the Gemara that eventually that he kept his promise and he made this gold ornament of Yerushalayim, this jewelry. The Kiniat Ba Itate de Rabban Gamliel, and the wife of Rabban Gamliel desired to have a similar crown. In other words, she turned to her husband, Rabban Gamliel, who was well off, by the way, and says, I would like one of those as well. Right? That's very, very beautiful what Rabbi Akiva's wife is wearing, if I could get one of those as well. So what did he answer, which is quite a surprise? Amar la, ma habis avadata. Have you done what she did for her husband? Heich ma dehavas avda, dehavas mizavna kli asa desara. Says that she would cut her own hair. She didn't have any money. She would cut her hair, and as the hair would grow in, she would cut it, and she would sell her own hair in order to support her husband, Rabbi Akiva, who was learning. The Yahava lay, and she would then take this, v'hu la'i be'araita, and then he was able to commit himself, to devote himself to learning. So that's what Rabbi Gamliel said to his wife. Now the question is how to interpret this Gemara, and I don't think it's just an issue of Rabbi Gamliel not wanting to buy this expensive crown for his wife, because we know that he was somebody who was very wealthy, and maybe he did end up buying the crown, you know, the Yerushalayim Shel Zahav for his wife, but he was making a statement about Yerushalayim. That's the way that I understand it, at least, or one possibility. And that is that one of the unique features of Yerushalayim is not only the Kedusha, the inherent Kedusha that's found in Yerushalayim, but what Yerushalayim is all about. And Yerushalayim is about self-sacrifice, it's about ambition, it's about devotion. And he said to his wife, that's the Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, right? Somebody who's willing to sacrifice in that way. To live in Yerushalayim, to be in Yerushalayim, and to talk about Kedusha of Yerushalayim, is not only the holiness that emanates from the Makom HaMikdash or from the Mizbeach or Kodesh Kadashim, but it's the holiness that we bring to life here. I think that's what Rabbi Gamliel was teaching his wife, and why the Gemara reports this to teach us as well, that Yerushalayim is about devotion. It's about commitment. It's about commitment to Hashem. It's about commitment to one another. It's about building a place of holiness, of Yerushalayim. And here I want to share with you the following Gemara, which is a well-known Gemara, even though many don't realize that it's a Gemara. I'm sure you've heard this idea that there's Yerushalayim Shalmata and Yerushalayim Shalmala. It's kind of a bit of a mystical, certainly a mystical, a spiritual idea that we have here. We're in Yerushalayim Shalmata right now. But above us, Yerushalayim Shel Mala. And what does that mean exactly? But look at what the Gemara says, and I'll offer the following interpretation. So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is a Gemara in Tainus, Daf Hey. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Avo B'Yushalayim Shel Mala. I'm not going to enter the Yushalayim of above. Ad She'avod Yushalayim Shel Mata. Until I enter the Yushalayim below. Umi Ika. Now, again, look at that line. God says, I'm not entering Yushalayim Shel Mala until I enter the Yushalayim Shel Mata. And look at what the Gemara says. Umi Ika Yushalayim Lamala? And is it, what do you mean there's a, what do you mean there's Yushalayim Shel Mala? In other words, the Gemara is not so sure about that. I didn't know there's, I know there's Yushalayim, but what's this Yushalayim Shel Mala? So the Gemara says, yes, there is Yushalayim Shel Mala. There is an upper Yushalayim as well. And that's what it means in the Pasuk in Tehillim, Yushalayim HaBnuya Be'ir Shechubra La Yachdav. That it's a Yushalayim that is built, and there is, it's Chubar, that it's connected to an upper Yushalayim. So there's the upper Yushalayim, which is like the spiritual, which is the Yushalayim of perfection. And then there's Yushalayim here that we're working towards that perfection, right? Trying to find that holiness, even though the holiness exists, but it's something that requires a lot of work and sacrifice and devotion. Interesting, what does God say? What does Hashem say? He says, I'm not interested in entering the one above until I first enter this Yushalayim. In other words, this is the Yushalayim that I'm interested in. Right? This is Yushalayim, the Kedusha, not some ethereal Kedusha, but a Kedusha that's here on earth. Right? Yushalayim where people care for one another and go out of their way for one another. And people that daven and lashon hara, the way that we speak and the way that we think, our machshava and our dibur, that it's different in Yushalayim. That's Yushalayim that Hashem says, I want. I first want to enter Yushalayim Shel Mata. Only then will I go above to Yushalayim Shel Mala. Okay, and let me conclude with the following, and talking about and we come back to our great love of Rav Kook and the teachings and the personality of Rav Kook, and he was a person who had a great, great love for Yerushalayim. Not only living in the Yushalayim Shel Mala, he didn't just kind of go off to a base medr somewhere and sit and learn and write, but he was very much involved, very much, every single day, many, many hours every day with the life of Yushalayim, with the life of the Jewish people, of trying to bring peace to Yushalayim, to try to make peace between the different factions, the love that he had for the Chalutzim, for the pioneers. And this is really fascinating. If you look at, this is the Kever, this is the tombstone of Rav Kook, and it tells his whole story, his whole life story in this tombstone, which, by the way, is very, very simple. You'll see some tombstones that have a lot written on it. This is the entire thing that you're looking at on the page. You can go today, if you want, right after class, Har HaZeisim. I've been there a number of times. You can visit the, maybe we'll wait till Gimel Elul on his yard site. We'll make a trip and to visit the burial place of Rav Kook. But I want to just highlight, there's three dates on here, and it says the following, and just moving, it's four lines from the bottom. I'm reading from the tombstone, from the Matseva. Allah Yerushalayma. So he came to Yerushalayim. This is referring to after he left Israel in World War I, and he comes back and becomes the chief rabbi Yerushalayim. So when did he arrive in Yerushalayim? On Gimel Elul, in the year Tafresh Ayin Tes, which is 1919, that he comes back, he enters Yerushalayim to become the chief rabbi on the 3rd of Elul. And when did he pass away? Allah HaShamayma on Gimel Elul in 1935. So that's the day that he enters Yerushalayim as the chief rabbi, and he passes away. But there's a date right before that, and the date is the day that he arrives in Israel, when he steps foot for the very first time in Eretz Yisrael. Allah, look at right above, Allah L'Eretz HaKodesh, on Chaf Chet Iyar, on the 28th day of Iyar, which is Yom Yerushalayim, which 53 years later will become Yom Yerushalayim. And this is on his kever, right after he passed away. So his connection to Yerushalayim, right, is really quite astounding, the mystical connection that he had, the soul of Rav Kook and his connection and his love to Yerushalayim. And we'll just end with the following. This is from a letter, right in the middle of the page, a letter that he wrote to his son. This is 10 years later after he's living in Yerushalayim. And Ka'avur Eser Shanim, Bechavtet Iyar Tafresh Ayin Dalit. So this is the day after Chavtet Iyar. He's writing to his son, Kotev Ara Lebino Machmado, to his beloved son. And here's, this is a quote from the letter. It's from Igrot Raya Chelek Bet. And the letter that he wrote, his son was outside. He was in Europe at the time, Ritzvi Yehuda, studying in the yeshiva. And he wrote him the following letter. Baruch Hashem, thank God, Avar Aleinu Yom Etmol, Chavchet Iyar. Thank God, yesterday was the 28th of Iyar. Zeh Hayom Hagadol, Asher Bo Zikanu, Zikinu, Tzur Yisrael Baruchu, that I was Zoche with, through the rock of Israel, blessed be He, Lavo Le'eretz Chamdato, that I was able to come, that I arrived in His beloved land. Again, he's writing, it was on Chavchet Iyar, 10 years ago that I arrived in Israel. V'lir'od be'enenu, that we saw with our own eyes, Hatchalat smichat keren yisho la'am kadsho, that we saw the smichat keren yisho, that we saw the beginning, the flowering of the redemption of the Jewish people, that I saw it with my own eyes for the very first time. Hodod la'Hashem, I give thanks to Hashem, al rov chasadav, for all of His kindness, uberachamav yosif la'amtsenu, and in His mercy, Hashem should continue to strengthen us. Ligbor chayalim, that we should be strong, we should be like soldiers, be'avodat Hashem ve'amo. Interesting that he uses that term. We should be strong like soldiers, thinking about Chavchet Iyar, what the soldiers did, the strength of the soldiers as we came back to Yerushalayim. And we should be zoche b'machon HaKodesh, in the holy dwelling, to be within the holy dwelling of Yerushalayim. So this is Rav Kook writing 10 years later, the day after Chavchet Iyar, and describing to his son the great joy and the great thanks that he has coming to Israel, and that he sees the beginning of the redemption. And I'll just end with the following anecdote. This comes from the Hasidic world, Rav Eli Melech of Lizhensk. So he was considered to be one of the most prominent of the Hasidic masters. And he tells a story of one night that he has a dream. And in the dream, he sees thousands of angels. And all of the angels have a brick in their hand, and all the angels are running quickly with a brick. This is the dream that he sees. And in the dream, he stops one of the angels, and he says, why does everyone have a brick, and why is everybody running with a brick? And he turns to Rav Elimelech Lizhensk, and he says, do you not know that everybody needs to bring a brick to build the Beit HaMikdash, to build Yerushalayim? So that's the dream that he saw. And the message is, or one message, is this idea that we have Kedushat Yerushalayim, but it's also the great responsibility to tap into that Kedusha, to recognize that Kedusha, and with that Kedusha, to live a life devoted and committed of self-sacrifice. That's what it means to be a Yerushalmi. That's what it means to live in Yerushalayim, the special devotion, the special care, the special concern, and the sacrifice at times to be here. And that's the Gedusha, as Hashem said, as we quote in the Gemara, that Hashem said, I want to enter the Yerushalayim Shel Mata, and then I'll make my way to Yerushalayim Shel Mala. All right, we should all be zoche to celebrate this week, Thursday night and Friday, the 56th. I know that number because I was also born in 1967. I'm 56 years old. 56 years of a reunified, to return to the Kotel, to the Har HaBayit, the miraculous Six-Day War that took place at that time, to give thanks. We should be zoche every day to experience the great joy and wonder and blessing to be in Yerushalayim. We'll stop here. Yes, please.